I think that even though we complain that there's not enough wisdom in the world or in our lives, actually, that isn't so much the problem. There's a lot of wisdom that we know, that we repeat all the time, wise things that we've heard, lessons of Torah that we've been taught, smart psychological bromides that we caught on Oprah or Dr. Phil. There's a lot of smart talk in the world. The problem is that we don't know when to apply the different kinds of wisdom that we know. Because different bits of wisdom contradict each other. There are, for example, English proverbs like out of sight, out of mind, which means if someone goes away, you don't think about them. But then there's the English proverb, absence makes the heart grow fonder, which means when someone goes away, you can't stop thinking about them. They're both true, they're both wise, and they both apply in different situations. It's just hard to know which one. Or, look before you leap. In other words, be careful. Don't just do something. But then you have, he who hesitates is lost. If you wait, then you lose your chance. Both true, both wise, contradictory. It's hard to know when to apply them. And so what we really need are guiding overarching principles. That is, a long-term view. Not for today, not for tomorrow, but for the arc of our lives to try to figure out how to live. Because if you have that, then even though you will make, of course, we all will, 1,000 mistakes every day, still you will have some sense of where it is you wish to be headed and sometimes how to get there. And that's why this week's Parsha is so useful and so interesting, because we have the conclusion of the first life that is described in any kind of detail. And I'm not even thinking of Abraham, I'm thinking of Sarah. So the Parsha, after all, is called Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, which assumes that we should learn something from the life of Sarah. And even though we only have scattered incidents, we don't really know day to day, what did Sarah do? What did she say? How did she act? What were her concerns? In some ways, that's useful. Because rather than getting distracted with, well, what did Sarah serve her kids for lunch every day? Although we know at least one meal that she made for the angels, but that's not so much a model for us, both because we don't serve angels and also because she served milk and meat together. Subject of another sermon. Remember, angels don't eat, so. But even though that's true, at least we can look at what were the fundamental principles by which she lived. And the first is clearly that life is, that overused word, it's a journey. For Sarah, it was a journey both literally and metaphorically. That is, she started in one place with Abraham, and they journeyed to another, and in the course of that journey, took other journeys, like to Egypt. That is, where she ended up was not where she began. And even the culture and the world she ended up with was not where she began. And along the way, what we see is that Sarah herself changes. Because remember, she begins as a young, childless woman with Abraham and dies with a son, a sort of stepson, and grandchildren. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. She doesn't have grandchildren that she knows of, but she will have grandchildren. She leaves behind Isaac. And that's part of the second piece of her life, which is that Sarah makes mistakes. She thinks that if Hagar has a child with Abraham, that she'll be okay with it, but she's not okay with it. She overestimates her capacity to live with Hagar and Ishmael in the house when she herself is childless. And the rabbis even draw this mistake from this lesson from Sarah's mistake. They say, don't try to be more of a tzaddik than you are. Understand your limitations. Sarah thought, I can do this. I can sacrifice myself for the child of another, even though I am childless. But given both Hagar's behavior and the reality that Ishmael is Abraham's child, she couldn't do it. So part of her journey is making mistakes and learning from them. And that too is the arc of a life. That's not a short-term lesson. Because we all make little and big mistakes. It depends what it does to us and how we learn and how we grow. And the reason that she could is that certain sustained values remained with her from the beginning to the end. If you recall, when Sarah and Abraham leave Ur Kasdim and move through Haran and go to Canaan, it says that they not only took their family, but hanefashot asher asu b'Haran, the souls that they made in Haran. What does that mean? According to the rabbis, that means the people that they brought under the wings of the Shekhinah. In other words, the people they converted to Judaism. That's why a convert to Judaism is known as the child of Abraham, our father, and Sarah, our mother. When you write a ketubah, a marriage contract, a marriage covenant, and one of the parties is a convert, you don't write their parents' names in Hebrew. Instead, you write so-and-so, the son or the daughter of Abraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu. Because if you're a convert, then Abraham and Sarah become your spiritual parents. And therefore, from the beginning, Sarah had this commitment to bring people under the wings of the Shekhinah, and she and Abraham stuck to that promise throughout their lives. So part of it is what values sustain you from the first moment to the last. Yes, a lot will change. There was a wonderful article, in fact, in the New York Times not so long ago that said, people look back and they realize that they've changed in the past, but they think they won't change in the future. So they'll say, you know, I used to believe this, but now I believe this, and I know that I will believe this for the rest of my life. Or they say, I used to listen to that kind of music, but this is the kind of music I like, and they think it won't change. But if you look back, 60 to 40, you change, just like you changed 40 to 20, and you'll change 80 to 60, and God willing, all the way up to 120 for all of us. Change doesn't stop. So you have to both have values that sustain themselves, that stay the same over time, and understand that things about you will inevitably change. You're a human being, and you will grow, and we're all on a journey. And thirdly, in addition to the journey and the values, Sarah's life was made beautiful by love. Look, it wasn't easy to stick with Abraham. Don't forget, not only is Abraham a man with a mission, and it's a terrible mistake to marry somebody who has this greater mission for God, because you can just imagine Abraham waking up in the morning and saying, I'm sorry, hate to tell you this, we're traveling halfway across the world because God told me. But don't forget that twice Abraham tries to pass Sarah off as his sister, because he is afraid that he will be killed and she will be taken. And that can't have been easy, to say the least, for Sarah. I mean, she ends up in Pharaoh's palace, if he had a palace, his large mud hut, whatever he lived in. And you can imagine that in order to stay with Abraham, she not only has to love him deeply, but forgive him. More than once. She has to forgive him for having Ishmael as a child, even though she told him to do it. Because as you well know, sometimes we tell people to do things and then we're angry at them for doing them. And we can't believe they actually did what we said they should do when they should know better. They should have said to us, no, I'm not going to do that. And Abraham goes and does what Sarah says, and then she has to forgive him for it. But by the way, Abraham has to forgive her too. It has to be mutual. But her life is sustained by love, first, of course, for Abraham, and then for Yitzchak, which is why, according to at least one midrash, one rabbinic teaching, it was when Sarah heard about the Akedah, about Abraham's taking Isaac up to the mountain to kill, that she died. Because having heard about that, her heart couldn't sustain living anymore with the thought that she wouldn't have Isaac. And lastly, Sarah lives to leave a legacy. She doesn't only think about what will happen today, but she has Isaac, who is, after all, just one person with the faith that what she believes and what she teaches and what she lived for and what she loves will somehow find its way through him to the world. And after all, it's her legacy even more than Abraham's. Because you discover after Sarah dies, do you know what Abraham does? I don't know if you're aware of this. He has more kids. Did you know that? I didn't make this up. It's right there in the Torah. He has more kids, but you know why you don't know anything about those kids? Because none of them are mentioned again. The only child that matters to the Jewish people is Sarah's child. She's the one that determines the legacy, not Abraham. Yishmael is not the father of the Jewish people. And Abraham's other children become the fathers of other peoples who've long since disappeared from the earth. It's only Yitzchak, it's only Isaac, it's only Sarah's child who leaves the legacy. Because you know and I know, really deep down, that if you ask who had the harder job and who had to show the greater devotion, Abraham or Sarah, was Sarah. Abraham gets to go out and argue with God and preach to God and so on. And what does Sarah have to do? She has to stay home and pray that she has a child and stick with Abraham because that's the commitment she made. Sarah has a tough job. But she is sustained by what she believes and who she is, which is why the parsha of Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, is also the parsha in which Abraham dies, but it's not called Chaye Abraham. It's not called the life of Abraham. And it's as if the Torah is giving us this secret signal. Yes, I talk a lot about Abraham, says the Torah. I'm now talking for the Torah. Yes, I talk a lot about Abraham. And yes, we think of Abraham as the founder of our faith. But I want you to know that when it comes to summing up a life, first comes Sarah. And the first piece of land that is bought in Eretz Yisrael that the Jews really own is bought by Abraham, but it's bought because of Sarah. It's a burial plot for Sarah. In other words, the first bit of land that we own in Eretz Yisrael is so Sarah can be buried. And she comes first. So it's a beautiful and a wonderful realization that if you look over the arc of a life, you can distill the values not that happened every single day, but the long-term business plan of a life that you know won't be realized tomorrow or next day or next week, but over the span of years. And then you realize that the particulars of your life have to serve that grand design. When I heard both of our B'nai Mitzvah speak this morning, you realize that they did that. They spoke about the way they were going to live their lives, not about what they were going to do tomorrow. Because at crucial moments, you look far ahead, especially at a time like this, and you think, what kind of adult do I want to be? What kind of home do I want to have? What kind of legacy do I want to leave for my children? And if we want to know, then the way we understand as Jews is by looking at the models of the people who lived not perfect lives, because no one leads a perfect life, but lives of goodness and lives of faith and lives of truth. And we can't get a better model than Sarah. Some of you know that in the Amidah that we recite at Sinai Temple, we have added the names of the Imahot, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Because after all, not just for girls and for women, but for men too, we need to expand our sense of the values we can learn not only from our forefathers, but from our foremothers. And the Torah is teaching us that this morning. Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, can enrich our lives. So we look to her, we learn from her, and we understand why it is that she is Sarah Imenu, Sarah our mother, because our mothers are our first and often our very best teachers. Shabbat Shalom.